It's All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Andrea Seabrook. Looking back on the last week in the economy, the headline might be, "The sky didn't fall yet." A week ago today, we were braced for financial crisis, not just here, across the globe.
Germany's Deutsche Börse and France's CAC40 had their biggest falls in more than 7 years.
Good morning. High anxiety. The Dow opening today below 11,000 for the first time in 2 years. Oil and gas prices still sky high.
Whether you can look to the U.S., you can look to the continental Europe, we see doom and gloom. Credit markets still.
Asian markets continued their downward slide on Wednesday after disappointing earnings from big U.S. banks.
When markets opened in Pakistan, investor anxiety turned into something darker.
In half an hour, the market was down by 400 points, and the investors started, to rampage. They shouted slogans and broke windows and paint and glasses, and the police had to be called in.
Another busy day on Wall Street leaves the major averages sitting pretty.
Then the markets did a dramatic about-face.
The action, Felicia, we are in major positive territory today.
I know, isn't it great?
Wall Street was in phase. Stocks enjoyed a strong rally today.
A seriously wild ride. When the dust settled, the Dow had its best week in 3 months. Still, storm clouds lurk on the horizon, especially when it comes to banks. Stock prices of banking companies yo-yoed all week after the federal takeover of California-based IndyMac. Then, regulators from six states descended on another bank, Wachovia Securities. Today, Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson said the list of troubled banks will grow even longer. Sounds like a story about big business. But remember, it's based on your cash. So does that mean you have the right to know when your bank is on less than steady ground? That's a question Bill Isaac has been wrestling with for decades. He chaired the FDIC from 1978 to 1985, when the savings and loan crisis led to a string of bank failures. He says regulators disclose as much as they can.
We try to disclose all the numbers we can possibly disclose, but we can't disclose everything that's going on inside a bank because a lot of people, particularly loan customers, have a business in the bank that they don't want disclosed, and we wouldn't want their information disclosed.
Mm-hmm.
When the regulators take an enforcement action against a bank, those enforcement actions are made available on the agency's websites, so that if you're doing business with a particular bank and you want to know something about it, it'd be good to read the enforcement action if you have money in a bank and want to know whether it's safe.
Well, let's talk for a second about a recent example, IndyMac. If you believe the regulators in this situation, the reason there was a $1 billion run on the bank was the public release of a single letter. It was written by Senator Chuck Schumer, and it criticized the way the bank was operating and the way it was not being regulated. So what's going on there?
Well, I think that's all factual. I think that as a result of that letter, within, I guess, a week or so, the bank had a deposit withdrawals of $1.3 billion.
But what did Chuck Schumer's letter disclose to those depositors that they didn't know already?
Nothing, nor did it disclose anything the regulators didn't know already, which makes one wonder why the letter went out. It's sort of like yelling fire in a theater, and it's very important we don't do things like that, and that letter, I think, was not helpful.
My question is, regardless of that everybody knew the numbers and the kinds of transactions that Chuck Schumer was pointing out, that there must have been some information communicated in Chuck Schumer's letter, even if it was just that Chuck Schumer feels queasy about this bank.
Well, let me give you another piece of information we don't give customers for good reason. We have a bank regulatory process that rates every bank on a scale of 1 to 5. We debated a lot when I was chairman of the FDIC as to whether we should disclose the ratings or allow the banks to disclose the ratings. And we decided that we should not disclose the rating because the rating, in the end, is just an opinion. It may be a well-informed opinion, but it's just an opinion, and it can be wrong. And so that what we felt was desirable is to, instead of disclosing the rating, disclose all of the information that led the examiners to reach their conclusion so that everybody else could form their own opinion.
Mr. Isaac, That is information that I would love to have about
my you're not going to get it.
but that leaves me, your average consumer, with little tools to make a judgment about which bank I want to use, because I can't sift through the kinds of data that a bank regulator can and make an informed opinion in just the same way that I go buy Consumer Reports and buy the car that Consumer Reports tells me to buy because they've gathered the data and made an analysis that I trust.
I would agree with you that it's hard for the average person to understand the true condition of a bank. That's sometimes fairly sophisticated analysis, but the average person doesn't have to worry about it because the deposits are insured by the FDIC up to $100,000 per depositor in a single bank, where I have no risk at all because it's fully insured, 100%.
Bill Isaac is the former head of the FDIC. Now he runs a consulting firm for the banking industry. Thanks very much, Mr. Isaac.
My pleasure.